Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Betsy Otto Thompson. She has a new book out called Walking Through Illusion, Jesus Speaks of the People Who Shared His Journey. And it's a series of short, interconnected stories that she believes, regardless of one's individual faith, give a better understanding of one's spirituality. And she does make the point that the book is not about Christianity, it is about people who lived long before Christianity began. So welcome to the program, Betsy.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, Mike.
I must tell our listeners that I have read your whole book through, and it's very, very fascinating. And it's the type of story that once you finish one short chapter, you want to know what is in the next one. And I found myself wanting to read it all the way through. I didn't have the time to do it all in one go, in other words, but it was that sort of book that you thought, what's going to come up next? So how did all this start for you in the first place? And I think it's always fascinating to know how people get onto this type of work.
Well, believe it or not, the gift of being able to speak with spirit began when I was 5 years old. And my mother had a grandmother she was very close to, and she had died a couple of days before I was born. And she was always telling me how much I looked like this woman. So, you know, I was pleased by that because I thought it was like a really definite asset to look like somebody that my mother really loved. So I decided to talk to her at night. And I didn't tell anybody I was going to do this, but so nobody told me I couldn't. And so I was I started these conversations, and it seemed perfectly natural to me that somebody responded. And I thought to myself, you know, at the age of five, I thought, well, everybody must be able to do this. So I asked my sister. I told her what I was doing. My sister was 2 years older, and I told her what I was doing, and I asked her who she spoke to. And that was my first indication of how the rest of the world was going to view this gift, because she teased me unmercifully for weeks, and I was completely traumatized by it and thinking, you know, if she told other people and they would react the same way, it would just be so humiliating. So I stopped doing it completely.
Oh, dear. Yes.
And what?
I said, oh, dear, that you stopped.
I did. I stopped. And then around when I was around 9 years old, I don't know if you're old enough, Mike, to remember, but when Ouija boards came out as the hot new board game, and everybody was buying them,
yes.
And our family was no exception. And so we couldn't wait to sit down and play with this board, because we were at the age where haunted houses were a kick, and we thought it sounded sort of eerie, and we liked that idea. So we sat down, and the first thing, of course, that happened is that the pointers started moving around, and then we accused each other of faking the results. But the what happened was, it's an excruciatingly slow game for three active children, and pretty soon I was the only person sitting down playing on this with this board. And then I began to panic, because I thought, oh dear, this is what I was teased for before, and so I stopped doing it. And so that was the end of that for years and years, until I was in California in midlife, and I was telling my son, my oldest son who was in school out there, about this incident with the Ouija board, and we were laughing hysterically about this. But he was sort of into spiritual growth, and so 3 weeks later he gave me a Ouija board for my birthday. So I said joking to him, you know, if you think this is, you know, this is a game that has to be played by two or more players, so you have to come over here and play it with me. So grudgingly he agreed, and he came over, and we sat down, and it took us 4 hours to get one sentence, because going to letter, and it was really a beautiful sentence. It was something like, in everything you do, say, or think, you are the love of God now and forever. But it was 4 hours, and my son said, you know, Mom, from here on, you're on your own. And so that was really the beginning. I started on the Ouija board, but I didn't stay with, it was just the beginning. It was a tool for me, like a piano is a tool for a musician, or like an easel is a tool for a painter. It was just a tool that got me started, and I don't really use the letters anymore unless I'm really stuck, but that's how it began. And so then the actual book began when I started using this gift. This isn't the first book, but when I started using the gift, and when I was thinking to myself, if I can ask Spirit any question I want to ask, what is it I want to know? And I was very curious about Jesus, because I had been raised Episcopalian, but hadn't been to church in years and didn't really consider myself a Christian anymore. And so I started asking questions, and that's how this book was created.
So how old were you when you first started contact with Spirit?
In the beginning,
with Jesus, I meant to say.
Well, that was, gosh, I don't remember. It was 20 years ago.
Oh, I see, right.
20 years ago.
Over that period of time, you've had contact with him on different occasions, and it's taken you all that time to formulate your book. Would that be correct?
Well, I self-published four books, and then I had the last one published, which was by a publisher, Hampton Roads, and that was the first in the trilogy of Jesus. And then there's another. This is the second book in the trilogy, and then there's a third book that I'm editing now, which will be the end of the trilogy. So it was, the writing, the books, I've been reading. The way I work is I sort of work on something for a while, and then I'd work on something else for a while. So the book has been formulating for years, but didn't really come together for me until 2 years, we've got about 4 years now, 4 years ago.
Right. Now, going by your experiences, you seem to have something about you that attracts these rather odd happenings, such as the occasions when these apports appeared in your house and the ongoing problems, if I may call it that, with these stones appearing. So tell us a little bit about the background to that.
What was appearing?
Well, the stones. You had the apports in the house, and then you had stones appearing, did you not?
No, I don't know where that you got that.
Okay. What about the apports?
Apples?
No, apples. Did not things suddenly appear in your house? You mentioned something to that of that nature in the first chapter of your book. You don't recall that a little bit?
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Okay, well, I can't remember precisely what it was now, but I made a note at the time. Well, let's move on to your connection with Indians. You seem to have a sort of soft spot for them.
For Indians?
Yes.
No, are you sure these are notes from my book and not another book?
Yeah, pretty certain, yeah. I thought that there was some connection with you and also your mother. Is that not correct?
Not in the writing of the book, no.
No. Okay, then, all right. Let's get on to the actual content about Jesus. Do you feel that he came through you, really, to give a teaching that was meant to go out to other people, or was a lot of it sort of a personal nature?
Well, when it began, I guess I felt that it was answering the questions I had, Mike, certainly. That's true. Then, of course, when the answers began coming, then they seemed so beautiful to me and so relevant to everyone's struggles and things that I did want to share them. And of course, in terms of my mother, I don't know where you were thinking of that, but I did have a long and arduous struggle with my mother through my life, and a lot of what I learned through this these messages that came to me helped me to deal with it, because I began to see my struggle with her as she was really a catalyst in my life, because she had a philosophy that I found unappealing to me, and her values were not my values, and it was very difficult growing up with that. But in a way, the way she was propelled me to find something that did work for me. So I see her now as a blessing instead of a curse, because she really pushed me to find what worked for me. And I also believe now that the people who give us the biggest challenges are often the biggest gifts, because they're giving us they're really the catalysts that are pushing us to find the growth that we need. And who else would volunteer but people who really care about us?
Indeed, yes. How were you actually introduced to Jesus? I mean, did you have some way of knowing that it was a genuine contact?
Only the idea of what the only the message that was coming to me, the message that was very loving. But I mean, I went through a lot of lessons when I was when I first started using the Ouija board, and that's probably relevant to the overall development of the writing, because there was a lot of prejudice against the Ouija board 20 years ago. It was had a bad reputation, and people had been using it and getting bad messages, and so they were calling the Ouija board evil. And when you think about it logically, it's just as absurd to think that a piece of cardboard is evil as it is to think that a dish rag is evil. It's just a piece of cardboard, and it's but it can be used. It's a tool like any other, and it can be used in a negative or a positive way. I always use the example, for instance, that the gift of oration was used one way by Churchill and another way by Hitler, or the gift of movie making was used one way to create Gone with the Wind and another way to create child pornography. It's all about taking personal responsibility for what you're doing and what you're putting out into the universe. And so I had lessons around that, and I don't think it really matters if it's Jesus or isn't it. It's about the message that comes through this through the link that really matters, because that's the only thing that is relevant in terms of whether it's a loving message or a negative message. So I mean, but it just figures that if it was about Jesus' life, it would be Jesus, and so that's what happened.
Yes, having read the book, I think it's very informative in the sense that Jesus, to me, seems to still be teaching. He's giving out information that helps people to understand themselves spiritually, and perhaps tells them also what they need to do to carry on evolving on their spiritual path. Did you feel that was the intention of it?
Absolutely, yes, I do. I feel like it's giving the message to everyone about taking responsibility for their own lives and being the creator. And that was one of the biggest things it did for me in my life. I learned to create an effect instead of be at the effect. And I think that this is he has a heart that wants to teach still. Absolutely, I do believe that. Yes.
Right now. In the early part of your book, you mentioned a question that I think it came from you to Jesus, and I think you said, did something wonderful happen to someone's initial, I put down as a B now, can't quite remember what that was, from knowing you. Do you recall that particular part? I think he said it's something to the effect that if you use a gift to help another, you are the one who benefits.
Yes, yes. Well, I think that's what his phrase, do unto others as you want them to do unto you, is all about. He wanted people to treat other people kindly for their own sakes, because he knew that was the only way to guarantee they would get what they wanted. So I think that's what his phrase, when he said so often and was so well known for saying, is really all about. That our lives don't get really promising and fulfilling from what other people do for us. It becomes fulfilling from what we do for others.
Yes. Well, I felt there were quite a few sayings, if you like, that, like that particular one, were exceptionally good and sort of hung on you a little bit, because you find yourself thinking, well, how is it that if you give something to another that you are the one who benefits? Because you don't usually give something to gain benefit from it, do you? You don't expect something back necessarily, not
right.
if it's given in the right way.
Well, I think it's the idea of oneness, that whatever we give to others, we give to ourselves, because everyone is us. In other words, we are always facing our mirrors and other people, emotional mirrors. That's why the book is mostly like not a historical accounting of his life, but an emotional accounting of his life, because the teaching is about the fact that whatever we put out in the universe, we are going to get back. So whatever we are giving to another, we are giving to ourselves. And we meet our emotional mirrors all along the way, people telling us. I always say to people, you don't need to worry about having a guide, because the universe is always showing you who you are by the people who are standing right in front of you. And the people who challenge us the most are the biggest gifts, because they're telling us where we need to start giving something else.
I like the way you headed the chapters. Like there was one that you called Approval, and it mentioned Mark, and it read that Mark wouldn't feel accepted. That was Mark the disciple, wasn't it? If he hadn't given acceptance. And that's similar to the last quotation that I've taken out of it. I think it's rather deep spiritually, and I guess the intent was to make people think about it.
Yes. In fact, that's what when I have the page at the end of each chapter with the questions for the reader to ask, the purpose of that was to bring the ideas from the book into the reader's life in a meaningful way. Because if you read something and you just read it and you don't apply it to your own life, it doesn't really have the same meaning it does if you have a chance to look at your own life and see how am I living this idea myself and how is it affecting what's going on in my life. And yes, Mark was all about getting approval. And Jesus reassured him that he only needed to prove of himself, because when you seek approval all the time from other people, then you are going to be attracting people to you who are always seeking your approval, and it's exhausting.
Yes. That's an interesting point that's come up through that, because it really relates to the law of attraction, doesn't it? Whatever
yes.
you focus on, you attract
yes.
to yourself.
Yes. In fact, you know, you could call it the principle of action, reaction, cause and effect, or the law of attraction, whatever you want to call it, it's still the pulling of energy back to yourself.
So it really means you have to be careful what you actually place your focus onto.
Yes. Well, I think that, I believe that the universe is completely and totally balanced. I mean, I couldn't exist unless it was totally balanced, and which means that everything given returns to the giver in order to maintain that balance.
Mm.
So I think that the universe shows us about ourselves. It shows us that it can only exist vibrantly while it stays in balance, and we can only exist vibrantly by staying in balance, too. But we create the balance we live. I mean, I spent the first half of my life, Mike, blaming everyone else for my problems. And
yeah.
all I did was draw people into my life who blamed me for their problems. And it was a big turnaround when I started taking responsibility because it was like a complete shift in my life. I was almost like a bag lady. My life was so, I'd gone through two divorces and I had no money and I almost became a bag lady, and I started taking responsibility for the predicament I was in. It was like, if I got into this mess I'm in, then I can jolly well get myself out of it. And that was like a turning point, because I took control. Instead of feeling that I was victimized, I started feeling in control of my life and then behaving in the way I wanted other people to behave with me. And that was a real turnaround, and stopped blaming everybody for my problems and looking at my problems and seeing how I had grown from them. And when I looked at my problems and thought how I had grown from having them, it shifted my focus completely from a negative attitude to a positive attitude. And I believe whatever you give attention in your life is going to expand. So if you're always thinking in the negative and you're always blaming everyone else, that's what you're going to get back. If you take responsibility and you take charge of your life, then you're going to attract people who are doing the same thing into your life. It's a snowball effect that whatever you give attention to expands.
Yes, indeed, yes. And I liked the little sentence in Fairness, which was another chapter you had, where he said, you cannot feel useful while making another useless. And I thought
yes.
that was a very good point.
Yes, yes. Because whatever you give to another, you're going to feel. So if you're making another person feel useless, then that's you're just like giving it to yourself. If you say to yourself, what is it? When people come to me and they say they want to find the ideal, the soulmate kind of thing, quote unquote, I say, well, yes. write down a list of all the things you want this person to have and to be. And so it's always important to write things down when you're trying to grow a little bit, because ego can jump in and try to make you forget everything you thought of 5 minutes ago by distracting you. So I always say, write it down, write all the qualities down on a piece of paper that you want this other person to have. And then start giving those qualities to other people one at a time, because that's how you draw this person into your life.
Yes, indeed, yes. And I find that type of message is very much repeated within the different sayings that Jesus came out with. And one I definitely liked, which of course is very true, was in the chapter on curiosity, when he said, if you search for God outside of yourself, the search will never end. To know God's love in humanness, the search begins within.
Yes, I definitely believe that's true. I think I can't say it any better than that.
No, I suppose you can. But you see, the good point there is that there are many people who don't understand that they are part of God and therefore God is within. And they do sort of seek different religions or groups or societies in their search for the truth.
Well, you know, that's true, but I believe that everybody here is on a personal journey, and who's to say that they're not doing what they need to do to get where they want to go? Because, you know, if you had looked at the first half of my life, Mike, and what I was doing and what was happening to me, you know, it would have been easy to say that I didn't know what I was doing, or that I wasn't looking in the right place for answers, or that my life was a mess. But you know, if I hadn't gone through that, I wouldn't have gotten where I am now. So I believe that the soul inside of us knows what we need to go through for whatever reason, that the soul is all knowing and all wise, and so it doesn't have us in situations or with people that we don't need to be with for some reason or another. We know it's. I mean, when I went back and started looking over my life and the people who had been in it, and I was at the point where I was willing to look honestly at my life and what was going on when I was with these people, I could always find how I was with my emotional mirror at the time. And, you know, granted, not everybody is aware of that idea, but this is the hope for the book, is that people will become aware, because there is nothing more powerful than knowing you have your answer right in front of you every single second. And when you accept that you do have your answer in front of you, if you don't like the answer, then you can start giving something else to people so that you do have something you like in front of you.
Yes, indeed. Moving on to the chapter on truth, I felt there was also a very good point in saying that no one else's beliefs have validity in your life unless you live them, love them, and therefore understand them.
Yes. Because talk, you know, I always talk about the idea that talk is really just noise coming out of your mouth.
Yeah.
It is. And if you don't believe me, all you have to do is to be with somebody who speaks a foreign language in an airplane sitting next to you, which happened to me, and you
yes.
realize how much words are just noises. And it's the emotion that goes along with the word that people really respond to. It's the emotion that goes with the thought that you're offering as you talk, that is the powerful catalyst for creating what goes on in your life. So it isn't what you say, it's really how you say it and what's the meaning behind what you say. So everybody
yeah.
has their own truth that they come here to find. And I don't think it matters what truth you have as long as it has love in it, because the whole book of poses the idea that we don't take our beliefs with us when we leave here anyway. We take the love we found from having them. So what difference does it matter what you believe, as long as that belief is bringing love into your life and sharing love with others?
Yes, that indeed is a very good point. I suppose what is behind this is that words carry an energy, and if the emotions are correct, shall we say, and they're sent out in love, then I suppose it would be quite correct to say that that does have an uplifting effect on someone.
Yeah. Yeah. And people come here for different reasons. You know, we don't always know what their reasons. I mean, I don't know what other people's reasons are at all. I'm completely
Indeed.
Ignorant. You know, I only have knowledge of my own life and what I'm going through. So I figure I have to trust that their souls know. Because I want to be able to trust my life, and if I don't trust other people's lives, I'm not going to be able to trust my own.
Yes, indeed, yes. Now, in the chapter, which I haven't made a note of the name of the chapter, there was one point where I think Jesus spoke about the question of religion or not. And I think he made the point that he didn't come to create a religion, although I think you found out that one of his disciples, Paul, did. Can you enlarge upon that?
Well, Paul came later, as far as I believe, came later in... he wasn't a contemporary of Jesus. He came afterwards.
Oh, right, I see.
Yeah, and he wasn't living alongside him. But he was teaching what he thought Jesus had taught, but he was teaching it in a way that, with a rather patronizing attitude, like it was, you know, these teachings were the only teachings. And
right.
That kind of got him in trouble. Because I think every religion in the world, God is in every religion if the people practicing it have love in their hearts. But if a person has a religion and it isn't bringing love to other people, then why would other people be attracted to it? So, you know, and as far as Jesus being a Christian, I mean, Christianity hadn't even been heard of when he was living. So he was just living what he believed was... I think he learned in the third book that I'm writing, the third part of the third trilogy, is about his life specifically and what he learned when he was traveling and how he grew from the influences he had in his life. And it has a guru in it, or, you know, a woman who is a spiritual leader in a town he came across that had a great influence on him. So I believe he was just living his life like any other person who comes here, he was very deeply, he felt he had a mission, but he wasn't sure what the mission was. He had to live a lot in his life before he found it. And I think he was just like everyone else, living his lessons and learning and going through the same lessons that we go through. And I think he went through the struggle of preaching a certain way because he thought it was right. I mean, I went through a time... And I had a really valuable lesson in terms of this mirror idea of meeting myself. I had when I first started doing this writing and the message was coming through to me, it was so incredibly loving to me that I thought everybody should have it. And so I was acting a little patronizing towards others and saying almost like, don't you get it, don't you get it? And I think I was pretty irritating to some people. And then I noticed that I had this person in my life who was always patronizing with me, and it was just horrible.
Yeah.
And so I wrote down all the things this person was making me feel. He was making me feel inadequate, like I didn't know what I was doing, like I couldn't go forward in my life on my own. I needed her advice. And so then I realized instantly what my mirror was, that I had been... being the same way with other people that I had been, that she was being with me. But then when I admitted that I was that way, then I was able to change the way I was being.
Yes.
And then what happened was, this person didn't change. She continued to be exactly the way she was, but it didn't bother me anymore because I didn't have that attitude in my aura anymore. So when I saw her being this way, it was just like I noticed it and I'd say, oh, there she goes again, but it didn't impact my heart.
No. Well, you've clearly, understandably, learned quite a lot yourself from this encounter with Jesus. Have you got any particular favorite sayings that he gave you?
Oh, you know, it's the same as people ask me if I have a favorite chapter. It's the same idea. I don't, because I always think that the one I'm working on is the best one.
Right. Yeah,
and whenever whenever I get a phrase, it's a phrase that's answering a question for me in the moment, so I always think it's the best one I ever got.
Well, I suppose the newest one does grip you rather, doesn't it? Yeah, I can sort of see the point, I think, in what you're saying there. There was lots of mentions throughout the chapters about various disciples and other people. And I seem to recall that Jesus actually confirmed that Lazarus resurrected himself And he expressed it in the way that he said he listened to himself and heart by the God within. Do you recall that?
Yes, yes. And I think that has to do, you know, people think that Jesus caused Lazarus to resurrect or come alive again, but Jesus, all the messages that I've heard from Jesus is that there were lots of people who didn't heal around him. It was the people who saw the same love in themselves that they saw in Jesus. They're the ones who healed. I thought that was very important in terms of that what was going on then, because I think it's the same thing that's going on now. You know, when you go to healers, sometimes people get healed and sometimes they don't. And I think it depends on whether you can see in the other person or you can see in the healer the same loving aspects in her that you have in yourself or in him that you have in yourself. And I think that, you know, it was because Lazarus looked into Jesus' heart and saw his own that he healed and that he came back to life. And I think that's what I believe about healing anyway. I think that nobody else can really heal you. You have to heal yourself. Jesus came in contact, some of the people who he came in contact with healed because his heart was so big and so loving that when they felt his heart, they felt the love in themselves, and the love in themselves was what healed them.
Yes, indeed. Love is a very powerful energy, and I suppose this is what brought about the part in Obstacles where Jesus said illness is an illusion.
Yes, yes, because that's what the book is about, walking through the illusion. In other words, it refers to the idea that we come here in our bodies to experience matter or that which is temporary, to recognize what is real or that which is felt. In other words, everything we see, hear, taste, smell, or touch is the illusion, and everything we feel about what we see, hear, taste, smell, or touch is real. And the idea is that something to be really real, it has to be real whether you're in body or you're out of body. And the only thing real both places is emotion. So we're walking through the illusion right now, because anything that's here today and gone tomorrow can't be real. It's just temporary. It's just an illusion. It's going to disappear.
Yes.
And when you think about it, go ahead.
I was going to say, it is nevertheless hard, I guess, for some people in the depths of ongoing illness to believe it's an illusion, because they might wish to be better, and yet they'll probably tell you that they can't seem to shift their problem. It's a hard one, really, isn't it?
It is a hard one. But if I was with somebody like that, I would say, if you find what you have found, Where is the love that you have found from having this illness? I mean, where has your heart grown bigger from having this illness? Because if you see that, then you're focused on the growth instead of the illness. And that's what I would urge people to do, because I believe that when you have something, a kind of illness, the soul has you, you know, if you weren't learning something there, if there wasn't something to grow, something to learn or a way to grow from having that situation, you wouldn't be in it. So, because the soul is too smart to have you somewhere that wasn't relevant. So the thing to do is to find where you have grown. Who have you become closer to? Where have you experienced love from having this illness? Because that's the reality that you're here to find.
Yes, indeed. Now, at one time you were visited by a being who you called the man from the light, and later you established that was Jesus. Now, what happened when you met him at the door one day and you walked right through him?
Okay, now that was in the last book, The Mirror Theory.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah, that was in The Mirror Theory.
Right.
Yeah, and so that was my introduction, and that was like metaphoric. I mean, it was an energy that came into my life, that's for sure. And it was when it first happened to me, I was like, I mean, I was like in a daze for a couple of months, because I was so just blown away by what was happening to me. And it took me a while to settle down and to really just say, now what am I going to do with this wonderful gift? But It was the story in the mirror theory was kind of metaphoric and I well, I'm not sure that I would have written it the same way if I was writing it now. Are you there?
Yes, I was going to say, how would you write that?
I would write it that it was an energy that was present for me, and it was real for me, but that doesn't mean that other people would have seen the energy the way I saw it.
Right, yes.
So,
yes.
Okay, does that make sense to you?
Yes, indeed, yes, yes. Okay. Very good point again. Now, in the chapter on complaints, you spoke about Andrew, and I think you put it to Jesus that Andrew deserved to be loved, didn't he? And the answer was he deserved whatever he thought others deserved.
Right.
So he was then asked, why should Andrew have those who weren't love those who weren't deserving? And the answer was so that he could get what he deserved. Now, there's a good moral in there, isn't there, really?
Yes, yes. That's the same idea that when Jesus said, do unto others, you know, do it for your sake. You know, if you receive whatever you think others deserve. And, in fact, Jesus talks about this in his traveling in the next book. I can share, he says something about the fact that when he was traveling, he wasn't very generous when he was giving tips to the people who were servicing him, but he expected to get big tips when he was preaching. Mm-hmm. And so he had to learn the same lesson, that if he wanted to get, you know, he wanted to he had to give what he wanted to receive. He had to give the big tips and the generosity to others that he wanted to receive himself. So the way he shares about himself, he makes it very clear that he was on a journey just like we are, and he was learning along the way just like we are, and that he was finding his ideas just like we do.
And yes,
indeed. He was just someone who was willing to go a little deeper into himself and become honest sooner than most of us are willing to do that, but he had the same journey. I mean, he said we're all energy, we all come from the same source, and no one choice is seen as more blessed than another choice by the source from which we all come. That all choices are seen as valid, and all choices are seen as worthy. And we all believe before we come here that the choices we make are the ones that are going to work for us. Granted, they don't always, but we always think they will.
Yes, indeed. And I noticed the same point is made quite frequently about how you attract to yourself what you give out, in the sense that in the chapter on betrayal, it was said that there is only one of us here. Whatever you give to yourself. And if love is absent, you're in betrayal.
Yeah.
Which is the same thing. He's saying that if you can't give out love, then you can't really receive it.
Yes, because when you betray others, you betray yourself. We are all one. We are all one heart.
Yeah. So I think they're very potent points that are made there, and I'm guessing that if you really got into it, you'd probably need to read your book a second time to really absorb some of the points that are being made. I guess everybody would be interested to know what he said about hatred. And he was speaking about Mary, who chose a path that could lead a person to leave. I think I've got that correctly. And Mary eventually saw her father as the one who pushed her to save herself instead of the villain who she thought had ruined her life.
Right, Mary Magdalene, yes.
Yes.
Yes. I find that very poignant for myself, too, because I really did think that my mother had ruined my life. And but she really pushed me to save myself, and that's really true.
Yes, indeed. You've covered so many different aspects of human emotion in there. about confusion, death, time. I shouldn't think there was much that was missed out at all. Were you actually given the titles for the chapters, or did you choose them yourself?
What happened was that I would write the chapter, and then the chapter would be about something. I didn't know what it was going to be about until I'd written it, and then it was obvious what the chapter was about.
I see, yes.
It's sort of backwards. You know, a lot of the things that created this book and the last one was backwards, because when I, but you know, that's what happened, because that's the way it worked. For instance, I didn't do any research on the book at all before I started writing it. And then with the mirror theory, and I was sitting down for lunch with the publisher at Hampton Roads, and he asked me what research I had done, and I said, I haven't done any research. I mean, he hadn't said he was going to publish the book yet, and he said, well, you have to do research. And I said, okay, I'll do research. So then after the book was written, I did the research. And it was kind of a miracle, because I found when I did the research that what I had learned, what I had written, was a lot of it, most of it, was documented in various books, and including the Bible. And so it was kind of a miracle to me that it had come so clearly to me when I hadn't done any research. And the same thing happened. I mean, I haven't done any research on all three of the books. And so it was a very interesting process in that way, and very affirming.
Yes. But the final comments that you made at the end of each chapter, sort of like a resume, that was clearly your own work, presumably.
Yes. And I did that because I wanted the reader to realize that I'm on my path just like they are, and I wanted them to know something about me and the struggles that I had gone through, so because it made me feel like I was in touch with the reader more in a way, and that we were all on this journey together, and it gave me a wonderful feeling to share the aspects of my life. And so I'm hoping that the reader, I've had some wonderful feedback from readers that say they really enjoy that part of the book, so I'm glad, really glad I did it.
Yes. One I thought was very interesting was when you said how often you accomplish your goals depends on how often you love your accomplishments.
Because it isn't really about the goal. It's about loving everything that you do and just being able to know that everything is for a reason, that everything has something to offer you in the way of growth. It always does, if you're willing to look at it. It takes honesty, but honesty is the love of God within, so it pays off to be honest.
I think the big message really is about love, isn't it?
Yes.
Whatever way you look at it, love yourself, love other people.
Not
treat everybody as one.
Yeah, not for their sake, but for your sake. Because it certainly feels a lot better to have love in your heart than it does to have envy and hate and resentment.
Yes, and indeed, I guess people don't always understand that those negative emotions often help to destroy the body, which is why they get illnesses. And there was a little bit, there was a little bit in the chapter on hearts that I thought referred to that, where it mentioned that body cells, accepted inferiority was around, but the cells themselves couldn't reason the way the conscious mind could reason. So if they were given inferiority, they accepted it as part of themselves.
Yeah, they accepted it as love. It's like, you know, God... the universe doesn't give us back the hatred that we give to others because it wants to punish us. It gives it back because it thinks that it gives us back because it thinks we think that's love. The universe interprets everything as love. So whatever you're giving, the universe thinks you want back.
Yes.
So and whatever you give to others, you give to yourself. So if you're giving feelings of envy and hatred to other people, you're giving it to yourself, and then when the body receives that, it thinks that hatred is love and expands it.
I like something that often comes up in spiritual teachings, telling us to dwell in the present and place hope in the future. Now, where do you think our future lies at the moment?
Well, I think that this in terms of the Earth, and I think the Earth is headed for a rebirth. And I think that the rebirth that the Earth is headed for is no different from the birth that we experienced when we came into humanness, or the birth that a woman goes through when she gives birth to a new infant, that the labor pains start out mild and far apart, and as the birth approaches, the labor pains get closer together and more intense. And I think that's what's happening to the Earth right now. I think it's headed for a new birth, and I think that the Earth is actually telling us what is happening. And I think that by the time it happens, that it will be so obvious that it won't be a supposition anymore. It will just be, yes, the Earth is rebirthing in some way. And it should be looked at as a very loving and hopeful thing, not anything cruel, because the Earth has to rebirth in order to stay healthy. And I think it's been documented that it's rebirthed quite a few times. And it has to stay healthy in order to remain a game that we can play and come here and be here. And it'll be around for as long as it's needed. But it has to rebirth along the way. And I think that the fact that we don't treat the Earth the way we want to be treated, or, you know, treat the ocean the way you want to be treated, it's going to make the birth a little harder because there's more to heal. Mm. But I think it's a natural birthing that happens every so many years anyway. It's just that we're making it a little harder on ourselves because we haven't been treating the Earth the way we should be.
Mm. I think that's absolutely correct. Do you support the idea that very soon, possibly at the end of 2012, when the cycle ends, that this may be indeed the time when the Earth may ascend?
I don't think that, though. I think it's going to stay around because there's plenty of people who still need to learn in this game. And so why would we do away with a game that is helping us to grow and expand? So I don't think that the Earth is going to end. I think it's going to rebirth. And I think what that means is, like, the volcanoes are creating new land and the tsunamis are coming and it's getting like the labor pains before a birth. And so I do think that's what I've heard, that it is a rebirthing. And I don't think it's going to end any more than it ended when it rebirthed in the past. Mm. But I think it will be different. I think it will be different.
Yes. No, I certainly didn't intend it to mean that it was the absolute end.
Yeah.
In talking of the end of the cycle, indeed, I'm of the opinion that the Earth is, as you would express it, being rebirthed. So, yes, I totally go along with that.
Yeah.
But I also think with that comes the rebirth of the people.
Well, I think that it's already showing in the people. There's a huge shift. If you know, if you think about now and as opposed to 20 years ago, Mike.
Yes.
And you know, there's a huge shift that's happened in those years in terms of the ideas in my book and other books being out there for people to read about, and to and many more people are receiving messages than ever before. So yes, I think the shift, that kind of shift, is already happening. Definitely.
Yes. Well, you mentioned other channelings, and indeed, you're quite correct. There does appear to be more than ever, and I have to say thank goodness for the internet. Otherwise, we probably wouldn't see a small portion of the messages that are around. But by being able to read a good selection of messages, I think it gives you a pretty good idea of what is taking place. And it does seem as though, in a manner of speaking, that time, if you like, is quite short. But one senses that time is speeding up. Do you get the same impression?
Well, yeah, but I always think that time speeds up as you get older.
Yeah.
Like, it certainly goes faster than it did when I was a kid. But, you know, the idea of time is fascinating to me because I've heard the message that when we first came here, we didn't think of time as passing at all. We only thought of the Earth orbiting in order to stay in balance in the universe. Mm. The time meant nothing to us. We came here as the gods we were, and we didn't age, and love kept us nourished. And so time now is like a big deal because we get older and we age. But it's all about using the time we have here in a wonderful way, so that we're using it in a positive and loving and compassionate way. So when you start doing that, the time passes quickly, because I believe it passes quickly is because there is no time in terms of the heart. The heart is just love. And so when we're just in love, in fact, you know, when I spend time writing, I feel like, 2 hours feel like 5 minutes to me. So in that aspect, time disappears for me.
Yeah, I think that does go to prove, as we've been often told, that time is really an illusion.
Yeah.
And we live in linear time, so we possibly can't really see that. But by your own experience, which you've just mentioned, and I'm sure most people have experienced that, depending maybe on what you're doing, time can seem to be an absolute bore and drag on and on, or it can pass very quickly when you're enjoying yourself.
Yeah.
So perhaps it's a state of mind to some extent.
Yes, I think it probably is. I love your saying that. I think it probably is. I think that's a great way to look at it.
You mentioned there that we were gods and clearly came down through the dimensions to experience on the Earth. It seems that now we're going back.
Backwards, you mean?
Well, back up into the higher dimensions. It seems the vibrations are lifting. We're now leaving this cycle of duality into a more loving vibration, more harmony, more balance and peace.
Well, I think there are certainly more people here on Earth today than there have been in the past who have that focus. So I think we all came back to be together, to try to do this, together. I mean, all the people who are writing these wonderful messages, and a lot of the messages, most of the messages have the same message, but they're said their own unique way for each person who's doing it. But basically, the messages are very similar. And so I feel we all came here in our own roles. You came here with your radio show. I came here with my books. Other people come here with they do through cards, or they do through psychic readings, or they do through whatever. It's just happening over. It's just happening. In fact, I'm constantly astounded by how creative the soul is, and the many ways it finds to come here and to share love. And I think that's happening more and more. But of course, while that's happening, the opposite is happening, because ego is always trying to kill love. But that doesn't really matter, because what really matters is that those who have that attitude find each other, and those who have the attitude of the shifting awareness and the enlightening and the love, they're finding each other too. So it's just one more example of how we're always finding our mirrors. You know, countries who feel that they have to kill to win are facing other countries that think they have to kill to win. So, but you and me and everyone as an individual is finding their own emotional mirrors in whatever else they're doing.
Yes, indeed. I think you're absolutely spot on in your description of what is happening now. And it seems to me that more people of the light or of the love seem to have incarnated on the Earth, perhaps to help the upliftment of our consciousness.
I think that's true. I think that it's certainly happening in a lot of different places, and it's certainly happening more and more. So, I mean, I like to think that I always felt that I had a reason for being here, but it wasn't until the writing came that I realized why I was here. And it completely changed my life and turned it around. And I think that's been true for an awful lot of people, just the people I've talked to from this short time when I've been promoting the book and meeting these people, which figures, because I'm finding my mirror of people who have been through the same experience.
I'm sure your book will prove to be very successful. I have to say, Betsy, that we've reached the end of our 55 minutes.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, almost.
I can't believe it.
I wouldn't believe it, no. But, you know, that proves that time goes fast. I've got about half a minute to mention next week's guest, which I shall do. So thank you very, very much for coming onto the program. Really enjoyable speaking with you. Thanks a lot.
Oh, thank you.
Right, friends, another very interesting guest. Next week, my guest will be Joan Ocean. She's quite well known in her own way. She has areas of research that include dolphins, whales, ETs, Sasquatch, and time travel. So that should be enough to whet your appetite, I think. So thank you for being with me today, and I do hope you can be with me next week. God bless you all. Thank you.